Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy. Get your motor
running. Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
I will start in the customary way of saying yes, which is exactly how Tim Nicholson always comes on air for Fender Bender on a Saturday afternoon. Yes, it is that time. It is 2 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon, which means it is time to talk about all things cars for the next hour at Joy 94.9. I can confidently say, as I always do, it is the very best radio show about cars on Joy 94.9. By default, it is the only one. But stay with us for the next hour. We are going to be talking about various bits and pieces going on in Australia and around the world. We'll be talking about what we've been driving lately. We'll be talking about what's going on, where we're going to be heading. We are heading off all over corners of the universe over the next few weeks. But we want to hear what's going on in your motoring world as well. You can get in touch very easily, either text 0427 Joy949, or you can email us on air at joy.org.au, live in the studios today, and we will endeavour to read out all your messages, no matter how dull or saccharine they are. But I won't be doing this alone. And by the way, this is not Tim putting on some very convincing English accent and sound like a dick in the process. It's actually Dan filling in for Tim today. He is on a plane to Japan as we speak to do something very luscious and motoring. But I'm joined in the studio by three very special people. Firstly, Jeremy. Secondly, Mike. But also sitting at the top of the pile is the lovely Hannah McElhinney on the buttons today. Hello, Hannah.
Hi, guys.
You will, of course, be contributing a huge amount to the motoring discussion today, won't you?
I'm just stoked on cars. I'm going to turn my mic off now.
Thank you for being here, Hannah. And Mike and Jeremy, thank you so much for being in the studio with us. Lovely to have you.
Thanks,
Your energy,
Dan.
Tim. Tim.
Oh, God.
I'm going to call you Tim from now on. Your energy, Tim.
Well, I'm pleased that I filled the seat and the boots. That effectively.
Except you're not in the right seat, but anyway.
That's all right.
Great energy.
Thank you.
You've woken me.
I think you nailed it.
You've woken.
Yeah.
Well, it's only the start. It's only the start. It could go horribly wrong from here on. Now, gentlemen, good weeks. Good weeks. Jeremy, we saw you a couple of weeks ago, I think.
It was a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Impromptu.
And you were just going off to look at a car, weren't you?
We were.
Yes. We were. But we'll talk a little bit about that later. We'll talk about the outcome, maybe, on how that inspection went, won't we?
If you want.
I'd love to.
You're effing this camel, so...
Okay.
Whatever you want.
I will continue to F that camel.
Is that a figure of speech I missed? Is that a reference that I'm not getting?
It's one of those nice
ones.
Yeah, you don't have to know the meaning. It just sort of seems to work. And Mike, busy week. You're always up to something.
No, I just sat on the couch in my underwear.
Don't believe... Oh, excellent. You too, huh?
Yeah.
Superb.
You know, it's all I do, really.
All right, plenty going on. I reckon we kick it off with some local news, don't you? All right, okay. In more serious news, let's start with the serious heavyweight stuff first. Now, the boss of Holden, Jerry DeRizos, has said that although the automotive industry in Australia is set to close, we all know that, that's old news, but he said that a recent move by the government to cut funding, which would help those businesses affected by the end of the automotive industry in Australia, will effectively mean that the industry will close a lot earlier.
He did. He did a media event this week that I attended, among several other motoring riders, and basically... all the car makers are leaving in 2017. There's government money to help the parts makers who provide the parts to the car makers there, and they need it because that's the only way they can survive. Abbott wants to get rid of it. So he's saying that the parts makers will collapse before 17, therefore the car makers won't have any parts, and they'll collapse as well, a bit like a flan in a cupboard. So he's a bit of an alarmist. He's quite aggressive in the way he goes and does these things. He's obviously got a vested interest in saying it because, you know, it's money that... his company would stand to benefit from. But it's a pretty grim and dire warning. Ford and Toyota weren't quite so on the front foot about it. When asked, they'd sort of played it a bit more down the line. But Jerry DeRizos, since he took over, has shown a tendency to make quite bold and outlandish statements, and this seems to be another one. So I'm not quite sure how accurate it is, but look, basically, if government money goes, we know the parts makers don't make money otherwise, so it would be pretty grim.
And it is quite a significant amount of cash we're talking. I think it's between 2018, which is the year after the last of the car makers goes, and 2021, they're talking about cutting $1.6 billion from that fund.
And perhaps even more importantly, between now and 17, when they are scheduled to close, the car makers, that is about $500 million. In the next 2 or 3 years. So it's a pretty fair chunk of change.
Yeah, it's not pocket money, is it?
So this is just another one on the wood pile for Tony Abbott?
Yeah, more or less.
Maybe we could ask the listeners if anybody's got any good news coming from Tony Abbott, I wonder.
Well, you know, by all means. According to Joe Hockey, you know, anyone who listens to our show who's poor doesn't drive a car, so they might be interested, you know.
That's another hot topic, yes, automotive related this week, of course, yeah. All right. So, I mean, as you say, Mike, we'll just have to see how this one plays out, because while he is an outspoken spoken gentleman and he does sort of come up with some quite outlandish things, I think the core of this is steeped in truth, but we'll just have to see how much of an effect it has.
I just think the public's a bit weary of it. You know, people see it as another story about, oh, Holden wants money, blah, blah, blah. They don't actually delve into it and see the seriousness of it because people are a bit tired of it, you know, and I think the general public's just kind of the mindset now, bugger it, they're gone, just take the money. So I think Abbott might actually win this one.
All right, watch this space. In better news, though, and keeping it local, now, both Holden and Ford have said that once they close up manufacturing in Australia, they will continue to do some things, and there'll be secret things. And just in the week past, we saw some evidence of secret goings-on. We acquired images of a very heavily camouflaged car on Australian roads, apparently going from the Yuyang's testing ground back to the Ford Development Centre.
What testing ground?
Yuyang's.
It's a cool name, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the Ford test circuit. Yeah, it's amazing. It's out right next to where Mad Max was filmed. It's amazing countryside. And they've got a whole top secret compound there where they test their cars. Anyway, there were spy pictures emerged of a car heading back from that proving ground in full camouflage. But we managed to do a little bit of maths and trickery. And from the size of the rego plate, we worked out this is quite a big car. Way bigger than anything that we're expecting on Australian roads.
So how do you do that from the size of a rego plate?
Well, a rego plate is a standard size. So if you see it that big on a photo, you can then times it by that many widths of the car, and you can work out it's actually a lot wider than...
Oh, okay, I get it. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so it turns out that this car, and we spoke to Ford, and they said, yeah, you might be onto something there. And it turns out it's the next Taurus, a car that is not coming to Australia, as far as we know at the moment. But it will be going to places like China. So, true to their word, Ford are ongoing with development of cars that aren't going to necessarily be in Australia.
There's actually more happening at Ford's proving ground now than there has been in years. Like, Ford have basically been given the job now of doing most of the cars for all of Asia-Pacific, and we all know that includes, you know, places in the Asia-Pacific are the fastest growing in the world. Places like China are driving the entire world's economy, and Australia is the...
Was that a pun there, Mike? That was a good one.
I liked it. Yeah, I was quite proud of it.
Thanks very much.
It came naturally. Yeah. But Australia is really driving this. They're really behind the development of cars for these places, and, you know, it's sad to lose the manufacturing, but the engineering's thriving, and this is another example of that, you know.
Yeah.
They've been given the role of designing a massively important car for the entire globe, as they did with the Ranger.
We know that Everest is happening here as well, don't we?
Indeed.
Saw some more technical little snippets coming out of
the Aussies. The Aussie engineers are very good at working on the smell of an oily rag, because for years they designed cars from go to woe, from sketch all the way through to final product, on a very small budget compared to what America was doing. And so they've gotten very good at being, you know, ingenious with small amounts of money, and that's obviously something that's in high demand. So they're kicking goals.
Good. Good to see that something's going to be remaining behind after they close. All right, then. Talking about Ford still, or kind of Ford, FPV. Everyone loves a fast Ford, don't we?
Yeah.
All right, okay. I'll cover this one then. Great reaction there, guys. Thanks very much. Hannah, do you like a fast Ford? No, it's fine. Okay,
maybe 40 years ago.
We now know that we know what the last FPV is going to look like. It's the GT F351, and Ford has announced, or FPV has announced, that the first and last of the last are going to be auctioned, and the proceeds are going to go to charity.
Going to be auctioned, are they?
Yeah, all right. It's Bathurst and an auction.
Dance.
All right, listen. While you have an anchor who is English today, you are going to damn well take this accent.
Is anchor the word you're looking for?
No, it was host. Thank you, Mike. yes, the FPV GT F351, which is
351.
It's not the engine size, the kilowatts, yeah.
Pretty iconic nameplate.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
If you want to buy one, it'll cost you $77,990, I believe, before on-road costs. It is. Or you can pay more than that and get all of your money going towards the National Breast Cancer Foundation, and you can bid for the first and last, number 1 and number 500 of the last FPVs on eBay. And you can be the proud owner of one of those, knowing that all of your hard-earned cash is going to a really, really good cause, breast cancer charity. And you can own probably the most esteemed of the very last, number 1 and number 1 and number 500. You can say you've absolutely bought the last FPV made in Australia.
Or the first.
But of course, because it's being auctioned, we have no idea how much it's going to be. It'll most likely go for way more than you could pay for in a showroom, so to speak. Anyway, are you going to be one of those people who's going to be bidding on eBay? I'd like to know. If you're going to bid for the last FPV, let us know, 0427-JOY949, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. We're going to have a little break, but we'll be back straight after this. This is Fender Bender. It is Saturday afternoon. We're talking about all things cars. Stay with us. It's a little bit light on our text messages this afternoon. I'm a bit disappointed. We normally have some loyal listeners out there letting us know what they've
been
doing.
Come on,
guys. Yeah, come on.
We're feeling lonely.
Maybe we're boring.
Oh, I don't think so, Jeremy. If that is your real name. No, I'm pretty certain it's your real name.
Thank you. Okay. I just can't stop thinking about what we were speaking about just before the show, because we were having a catch-up. I don't get to see you so often anymore, Dan. You're going to a sausage party. I think I need to get this off my chest.
Yes. All right. Thanks,
Okay,
Jeremy.
I know it's not part of the
schedule.
All
right. There was at least two very good puns
in
that introduction.
Yes. Yeah. We'll digress from the news briefly.
Tell us about your sausage party.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm going
that's how you started. That's how you opened when you told me that you weren't available for a drink after the show.
Yes.
You said, I have to go to
a sausage festival is exactly what I think I said.
Festival.
Yes, yes. Okay, so a friend of mine is having a party, a gathering of close friends. It's not some kind of orgy, Jeremy, all right, if that's what you're hoping. It is genuinely, we're going to make sausages. It all sounds terribly domestic and very efficient of me. We're making salami and sausages, and then we're going to have a big gobbling session at the
gobbling.
End of the
evening. Gobbling? Yes. That's how you put it, Dan, and you're supposed to be the straight one in the room.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Thanks very much, Jeremy. I'll put some images up there on the internet. You can see my sausage festival, if you like. Back to the news, thank you. And still remaining with Ford, the constant drip feed of leaked images from Ford and their new Falcon continued last week. We've now seen its arse. The new Falcon bum is out there. Are we interested, guys?
Is it small?
Not particularly.
Well, I only like small bums.
Okay, all right.
This is getting out of hand.
As we hoped.
Indeed.
Interesting, not interesting, just
don't
another
care.
Teaser. Yeah, don't
Stop
care.
Stop teasing. I hate it when car companies tease.
Yes, true.
They try to drag out the launch
I'm interested.
Of a car.
I love bums, but...
Yeah, it's
you need to describe
drag
it.
Drag out the launch, don't they show a little headline.
You really need to describe it to me better, because I haven't seen it.
It looks exactly like a Jaguar. Totally like a Jaguar, in fact. Yeah.
So would you describe it as an arse?
Oh, I would say...
Supple?
Athletic, you know. Athletic. Probably does a bit of working out. Doesn't have a desk job, I would say, you know, looks after itself.
I think that's how the designers said it when they were asked as
well. Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
is it groomed?
There's no bikini waxing marks, if that's what you're asking.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, so we've seen another bit of the Falcon. Whatevs. Show us the whole car, I think is what Mike's saying. And Mike, if we're talking about teasers, you want to have a little bit of rant later, I think, don't you, on teasers?
Well, it's kind of following on from what you were saying a while ago on this very show, Dan, that there's an increasing trend among car makers, rather than just showing us the new thing they want to show us, they show us little bits of it again and again, and then they want us to piece together the puzzle. And it makes sense in a way. They want to drag it out, make the whole launch last longer, but I just find it pretty tedious.
We can vent a little bit of spleen about that later if you like. And good news, we know that there's not going to be an official Melbourne or Sydney Motor Show, at least for the foreseeable future, but we are going to get some sort of replacement with a show announced to go from the 25th to the 29th of November at the Sandown Raceway. So we are getting, and this is going to be probably every bit what you'd expect from a motor show, plus a few more live events and things. So,
well, there's a couple of motor shows on the way.
Sausage festival? Hopefully. God, I'm well into that.
You know, what we can supply.
What was that, Mike?
Well, there's a couple of motor shows coming back, because there's that big one that's going to be the Showgrounds early next year as well that we talked about.
Yeah, of course.
Ago. So there's two rival motor shows coming back. There can be only one, though.
Are they still a popular thing?
Not really.
No. Okay.
Well, it depends. Maybe they're I think they're trying to bring it back.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, I think they recognise, as you say, Jeremy, they're not particularly popular, and Mike, you back him up, that it's not really what people want anymore. We crave continuous, relentless entertainment. That's what we want. And wandering around a show with things that don't move, cars that you can't get in or drive, you know, is not very interesting to people anymore. So what I reckon they're going for with Sandown and the other shows is more interactive nature, you know, touching things, driving things, you know, events, show, you know, that's what I think they're going to go for. And they will attract, I'm confident they'll attract a few more people. Whether it's enough to be sustainable, I don't know.
What about the location?
Sandown is a great racing circuit. So, I mean...
Yeah, but it's a racing circuit. It's not a motor show circuit.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, for example, would you rather go to a motor show in the Melbourne Showgrounds, or would you rather go to one at Calder Park?
Melbourne Showgrounds, because it's closer.
Well, yeah.
Calder's pretty far away.
Why do you undermine my really carefully thought out point? You know, I spent hours on that one, and you just come straight in and bulldoze it. I think people are more inclined to go to areas associated with motorsport and cars.
But if they're poor, they don't drive.
Did you expect us to come on and just be compliant, Dan?
No, not for a moment. This is why we love you, Fender Bender guys, because we never know what you're going to come up with. All right, okay. All right, a bit more serious news. The FCAI has released a report recently saying that they don't believe Australians pay over the odds for new car prices.
What is the FCAI?
Federal Commerce for...
Federal Chamber of Automotive Industries.
Thank you.
Sounds boring.
Yeah, but
a little bit.
Well, okay, and someone, a Queensland dealer, has said that... it is boring. Not only is it boring, it's not worth the paper it's written on. He actually said that. He said, Australians are being ripped off on pricing and it's easily proven with the simplest of investigations. He's saying that this report by the FCAI that says that we don't pay anything over the odds or more than we should in Australia for new car pricing. And he says it's all smoke and mirrors, quote.
Interesting.
Yes.
But I never understood. People often make this argument where they say, oh, you know, a Mercedes C-Class costs 30 grand in America and it costs 60 grand here, therefore Aussies are being duped. But there's so many factors that people don't consider. There's the fact that it's a faraway place. It's a very small market with wide spaces, so there's high overheads. There's high labour costs. There's fluctuating currency you have to hedge against. There's so many reasons why cars here are expensive. There's probably an element of gouging, but you got to also remember that this is the most competitive market in the whole world. On a ratio of the 60 brands for 1 million sales. It's huge. Heaps of competition forces prices down. Cars are expensive. They always have been. But relatively speaking, they're actually cheaper now than they've been in four decades. And while in raw numbers, they're more expensive than America, as a proportion of income, they're no higher. So this guy is out there and he's got a point, and I suppose he works in industry, so he probably knows what he's talking about, but I'd probably call him out on some of what he said.
I'm just very interested. It was surprising to hear this guy come. He runs a dealership, he owns a dealership in Queensland, a prestige car or luxury car brand, and I'm just surprised that he was happy to go on record saying these things.
I'm thinking that the brand that let him sell their cars might be having a little bit of a chat to him.
They must do. And this kind of thing goes all the way back to it goes back to Munich. So that gives you an idea of the brand we're talking about. Yeah, I mean, this news reverberates around the world when a dealer is saying something as caustic as that.
It's unusual, and there's probably more to the story. So when you're a dealer, a car maker lets you sell their stuff. He's probably had a fight with this car company and a disagreement with them, and so he has an axe to grind, and there's probably a whole bunch of factors here. But look, he's on the ground floor. He sells cars. He knows better than most. And if he says there's rorting going on, well, who would know better than him? So
yeah, hey, absolutely.
Maybe he's right.
And when it comes to... I'm on your side with this, Mike. You know, there's no doubt we do pay a lot for cars in Australia, but we're talking luxury cars here. We're not talking, you know, bread and oxygen. You don't need a Porsche. You know, you don't need a prestige car. People pay the money because they clearly think it's worth it. Yeah. If they didn't, they wouldn't. That's the reason.
Totally. Porsche is selling in record numbers right now.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
They can get away with charging what they like. It's the market. You know, it's why Prada charges so much for its bags.
If you
look at a budget car, it's actually cheap as chips.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. If you really think it is that bad and extortionate, don't buy expensive cars. It's as simple as that. And the market will respond to that. They'll bring their prices down because they're not making any sales. Simple as that. There you are, dear listener. If you want to make a difference, don't buy expensive cars. If you are an expensive car shopper, then let us know. 0427JOY949.
Or you can borrow, email. Let me borrow some money off you if you
yes,
can, please.
Yes. Perhaps you could support the Fender Bender fund and allow us to buy some kind of communal Bentley or something. That would be lovely.
Yeah, that would be lovely, yeah. Or you and can a driver.
And you can email us on air at joy.org.au. A little bit of international news before we move on to some other things later in the show. Jaguar. Now, I've been accused of being mildly patriotic when it comes to that brand before. It may be true. It might not be.
Are you British?
Yeah, it's funny. Yes, actually,
I thought you were from Bathurst.
You. I am now a dual citizen. I got my passport. I'm now.
That's right.
I can now say I'm British / Australian. And
what order do you say it in?
Probably that. Yeah. Well, it depends. Depends which passport I'm traveling.
Because if you're doing it alphabetically, Dan.
Oh, I see. Okay, maybe I'll change my ways.
That's right.
Anyway, Jaguar. I do quite like a couple of things they're doing at the moment, but they've just announced they're going to build a new car, except it's not a new car. It's a very old car. Allow me to explain. E-Type, one of the most famous Jaguars of all time. They made, back in the 60s, a limited run of what they said at the time were going to be 18 lightweight racing Jaguar E-Types. All aluminium construction, race-tuned engines, lightweight wheels, roll cage, all the things you'd expect to see on a 60s racer. But they only ever made 12. They said they were going to make 18, but they only made 12. Yes.
Oh.
Do you know what they're going to do? They're building the remaining six. OMG.
Better late than never, right?
Wow.
True. So they're going to sell them. You can buy a homologated 1960s Jaguar F-Type lightweight, which is new but old.
Well, have all the same everything.
Yeah, yeah. They built them. The parts have just been sitting there. They never made them. And they just said, what's those boxes out the back? Why don't we just throw it together, see what it is? Oh, my God, it's one of the most fabulously fast and lightweight and expensive Jaguars we've ever made.
Wow.
And they're going to be six up for grabs.
Wow.
I would love to know what they're going to charge. How do you ever price a car?
I reckon $2 million.
It's got to be something like that, isn't it? It's going to be fabulously expensive. And who buys it? And if you bought one, would you ever use it?
Would you feel ripped off?
Exactly right.
Now, would a Queensland dealer say that you were being gouged?
Jeremy, you make a bloody good point. Is that someone will buy them? They're never worth it. Of course they're not. It's just a collection of aluminium and bolts.
Yeah.
And yet someone will pay around $2 million for it.
Amazing.
Yeah. I want one so bad.
Certainly the best looking Indian car there's ever been.
Yeah.
Because, of course, Indian company owns Jaguar now.
Oh, that's another good that's another good argument. Is it a British car or is it an Indian car? Because bits were made when it was English owned.
That's a good point. And Jaguar still make all their cars in the UK.
Oh,
just the money that pays for that comes from India. So.
Well.
Interesting.
There we go. I'm going to go and put in my order right now.
Yeah.
We've got so much more coming up on the show. We're going to have a little break right now, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about some things we've been driving lately. Stay with us. This is Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. And you're joined in the studio by Mike, Jeremy, and Hannah, and my good self, Daniel. This is Fender Bender. We're talking all things cars. Before the break, we went through all our latest news. There's actually quite a lot of news. I was surprised at what's going on locally. But now we're going to talk about new products, new things that are out there that you can buy for your massively overpriced price tags. Mike, you drove a little cheeky Holden, didn't you?
I did, Dan. There's a Holden little SUV called a Trax, which you might have heard of. It's one of these growing number of tiny, tiny SUV models that are basically a light car like a Barina underneath, and then they just pump some steroids in, jack them up a little bit. People like to sit up nice and high. That kind of car. It competes against Ford EcoSport, Peugeot 2008, Hyundai iX35. And it's always been a pretty decent car. Holden's got a pretty ordinary product lineup aside from the Commodore, and the Trax has always been one of the better cars that they've imported, except its engine was kind of crap.
It was
his naturally aspirated 1.8-litre engine that's been around since the 90s. Real weak point. Holden did what it should have done from day one this week, which is introduce a small 1.4-litre turbo engine, which is used in the Cruze and the Barina RS. And it completely changes the car. It actually becomes one of the class leaders. So punchy, smooth, economical, everything that the regular Trax isn't, basically. Pretty impressive.
And so how does it go? I mean, is it a decent thing to drive?
Surprisingly, it is. The Aussie engineers have calibrated the car specifically for our roads. They're given license to take a car that's brought from Korea, and then they fettle it and tweak it and change the dampers and the springs and the steering and all these things and make it a little sportier. And it's a good compromise. It's pretty nimble. It's pretty fun in the twisties without being overly firm or harsh. It strikes a pretty good balance. It drives better than the average small SUV. Not that driving dynamics tends to be a priority for that kind of buyer, but it's good to know that it can. And it looks kind of tough and cool. It's full of equipment. It's got a great infotainment system. It's pretty practical and spacious. It's front-wheel drive, so you can't take it off-road, but nobody takes these small SUVs off-road
but
anyway.
Did you say it's from Korea?
Yeah, from Korea. From Korea, like a lot of Holdens are, so Malibu.
Oh, are they? I didn't know that.
And there are a few others. They only make the Commodore and the Cruise here, and the rest they bring in from overseas, and this is one of them. And the engine basically turns it into the second best Holden behind the Commodore.
Wow, big call,
except
Mike.
Except for the problem that it's only available in the top spec LTZ, which makes it $30,000,
ooh,
which is a bit pricey. It is very
well equipped.
The tiny SUV market, the Nissan Juke and the Peugeot 2008 and the maybe the Nissan Qashqai at a pinch, although the Qashqai is bigger. It's very small, and the problem is at $30,000, even though it's very well equipped, it's kind of competing with an entry-level X-Trail or CX-5 or RAV4, and they're all much bigger cars. But if you don't need a massive amount of space and you want something that looks kind of cute and quirky and cool and has a bit of, you know, chic appeal to it, you could do a hell of a lot worse.
So it appeals to someone who wants this kind of car and perhaps puts a little bit of a premium on a driving enjoyment.
And someone who likes to sit up high on the road but doesn't want to go off-road, someone who, you know, likes that kind of image of having something that looks tough even though it actually isn't. And there's a really increasing number of people that are like that. And I can kind of understand why. They're sort of pilloried, these cars, but I get why they're appealing. If you're not into cars necessarily, you're not an enthusiast, well, it's a great car.
Yeah. I like that engine. I've driven that engine in the Barina RS, and I thought it was a really cracking little donk in the tracks. I think it will probably
And it's funny, you look at Australia, like car sales are dropping this year, but the small SUVs are booming. They're the only part of the market that's doing really well,
right?
Except for premium cars. So people are responding to this sort of vehicle and they're moving across in droves. You're going to see a lot more of them on the road.
Speaking of moving across in droves, I drove a very interesting little car this week. Now then, I turned up to the drive in a very head-turning car. I arrived in my drive car of this week, which is a bright red Porsche Panamera GTS, right? It turns a lot of heads, but that's not the car I'm talking about. The car I drove turns even more heads than a fat red Porsche.
It's a pretty fat red Porsche, isn't it, Panamera?
It is. It's quite delightful. The car I am talking about is a London taxi. Now, hold your horses. I know you're thinking this is a pointless car. Why am I talking about a London taxi? Because before Christmas, you're going to be seeing them on Melbourne's roads. Yes.
Oh, is it actually confirmed?
It is confirmed now. This is big news this week.
Oh.
So, the London Taxi Company import this. It's a Chinese-made Geely. The car is actually a Geely. It's called the TX4. But it is purpose-built for carrying people. Now, they've just completed a trial. Well, the trial is ongoing since December in Perth. They've got 100 of these cars on the road. They've taken 60,000 paying passengers since December. People seem very happy with it. The fleet is running really well. The drivers are loving the car. So are the passengers. And now the Victorian Taxi Directorate has authorised the use of that car in Victoria. And so now we're in the final stages before we actually get one.
What colour are they going to be?
Good question, Jeremy. I'm going to come back to that a little bit later because that's a very interesting
question. I'm not very patient. Hanging, Dan. Come on.
Well, okay. Well, look. All right. Okay. I'll let you know now then because there's no
lucky day.
News won't wait. Okay. Cabs in Melbourne at the moment have to be yellow because they make them easily recognisable.
Because nobody buys a yellow car, so you can pick them out.
These cars are so easily recognisable, they don't have to be any particular colour at all.
Wow.
Yes.
It might have a multicolour fleet.
You can have whatever colour you like.
Well, in London, they're all black, right?
Yes.
Famous London black cabs.
And they do look good in black.
Icon of London. And Victorians love, or the rest of the Western world loves, you know, Cool Britannia, British chic, black taxis, so emblematic of that country. They're awesome looking. And if they bring them in black, it just adds a whole other layer to it, doesn't it?
It does. However, black cars in Australia in the summer, not such a good idea. So it's looking maybe more. The ones in Perth are white. The one I drove was a lovely pearlescent silver. And I reckon
silver.
Yes.
It was a good silver, that one. Oh, yes.
It really
going to go and hunt some pheasants
that's
now.
That's right. That car, it really matched my hair. In my twilight years, silver really is a theme, you know.
No, it's a good-looking car. It's iconic. And, you know what? It drives really well.
Well, they look like they don't. Don't they...
topple over, like a noddy car.
It drives beautifully.
How fast can it go?
I was too scared to try. But no, look, this is not it's the only one in Victoria. I'm not going to risk bingling the only one of its kind.
That would be a story. Yeah. I crashed the only London taxi.
It actually drives really, really well. It's designed for urban driving stop-start. It's got a nice little 2.4 turbo diesel in it, made by Chrysler Group. It's very good. The secret to its ride comfort, though, is it weighs 2 tons.
Oh.
And any lumps in the road... How many times have we got in a cab and the thing feels like it's falling to pieces? It's been shaken to bits by Victoria's roads. This taxi is just irons. It's one of the smoothest rides I've ever experienced. It is remarkable.
So it's over-engineered in the extreme.
Over-engineered. Very heavy.
Right.
It seats 5 in complete comfort. Plus the driver.
So 6 people. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And then in the...
So no more having to squeeze into the boot of the taxi.
Exactly.
Does it have a hose-out interior?
It does seem rather designed to take the onslaught of drunk people on a Saturday night. Mm. Yeah. It's a purpose-built car.
And did you say... You said Wi-Fi, Mike?
Yeah, free Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi inside the car.
Yes, so you can jump in and you can download as much pornography as you like while you're on board. It's brilliant.
Wow.
Now, this is a purpose-built car, so it is infinitely better at doing the job than any Falcon or hybrid Camry out there. And it looks like, before Christmas, you will be able to hail one of these and jump in. And do you know what? They're not charging any extra for these.
I do have to ask the elephant in the room question, which is that this thing is made in China. And while a lot of stuff that we have is made in China and it's great, Chinese cars have always been a little bit behind the competition for quality and design and all these things. So can we trust the London taxi since it is made in China?
Well, for someone operating one of these, then there's absolutely no concern, because they've come up with the London taxi company has actually come up with a really good idea. You can't buy one. You can only lease one. And the lease plan covers everything except your diesel. So you just put fuel in it and keep driving it. They will service it. They will repair it. They'll do everything you need. And wow. So there's no concerns. If what Mike's saying, you know, these are Chinese-built cars, could be dubious quality, you've got nothing to worry about. That won't be paid for you at all. So it's a really good idea, and this is how they're going to get people on board. Also, they've actually made a huge number of developments for Australia. They've boosted the air conditioning for Australia. They've introduced all kinds of technical innovations, intercom in the car. They've changed the suspension for Australian roads so it is smoother. They've actually developed this car a lot since it's been running in Perth, and what we're getting is a bespoke Australia-only product. So it should be pretty good.
Is it the same one that's on the roads in London? Are those ones made in China too?
Yes, but there's a few different competitors in London. There's a few different brands you can jump in, whereas this will be the only one. And that'll be the thing that might start to threaten the London taxi, the Geely TX4, is there may be other competition. But look, it'll be good for the consumer in the long run and the customer and the drunk person.
So we have to pay in pounds?
That would be lovely. That would be really, really nice.
Do we have to look for lorries out the back window?
I'm being impugned left, right and centre today. Honestly, next time I'm just going to come with a big bogan accent and there'll be
G'day, guys.
No arguments.
How you going?
We have about 15 minutes left. We hope you stay with us. Not that we know you're out there. If you want to let us know you're listening or what you're doing at automotively this week, 0427JOY949 is the text, or you can email us on air at joy.org.au. We're going to be back very shortly. You're on Fender Bender. This is Joy 94.9. Happy Saturday afternoon. We're talking all things cars. Just before the break, we were talking about the London taxi that will be on the streets of Melbourne before Christmas. But we talked about the colour of it, and just one thing I wanted to say on the subject of colour. We have spoken about the fabulous Ferrari LaFerrari on this show before, the unbelievable hybrid-powered Ferrari.
Sounds like some kind of pasta.
It would be delicious. I reckon it would be spicy.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, we've seen this car, obviously, and I think I've only ever seen it in red. Has anyone ever seen a LaFerrari in anything other than red?
I have.
Have you? What colour did you see?
The Jamiroquai guy owns a bright green one.
That is the one I'm talking about.
Oh, really? Did I just cut your grass?
No, it's fine. That was about the point I was going to... Yeah, I didn't want to drag out too long. It is Jamiroquai, after all. Hey, Hannah.
Yes?
What do you think about Jamiroquai?
I love Jamiroquai so much.
Thank you very much.
Can't do no wrong.
Thank you very much. That's
all
I want.
He's just a hit-maker.
Yes, Jamiroquai, a law unto himself, he ordered his LaFerrari in green. What WTF is all I thought.
Good
I
mean, for him.
Well, is
got
it?
Them. Yeah, it totally is. Personal choice. He's got the money. He's got the clout. Ferrari have let him buy one of their cars, which is the case with Ferraris. You don't get to go and ask to buy one. They offer you and you get one.
Really?
You know, and he wants to stand out.
Is
Why
that
not?
With all Ferraris?
Yeah, not like entry Ferraris, like a 458, but they're special editions. You can't just say, I want to buy one. Ferrari will come to you and say, you're a loyal buyer. Would you like the honour of buying one of our cars?
Oh.
Isn't that fabulous? Well, anyway, I actually, in a way, agree with Mike. It's a lovely green. It does look fantastic.
Oh, really?
But the confusing thing was, I saw the little thumbnail image initially, and I didn't know what the car was. If it had been red, I would have spotted it a mile away as being a LaFerrari, but because it's green, I didn't spot it. Anyway, we've got plenty to talk about before the end of the show. We've only got about 10 minutes left before we go. Now then, Jeremy.
Yes.
Last 2 weeks ago, fortnight ago, you were in the studio talking about you were going to go and look at a car.
Yeah, did we mention what type of car it was, didn't
you? You can mention that again, that's fine.
Okay. With your help, Dan, have purchased the car.
You did, you went for it.
Yeah, went for it. So I've been in it for 2 weeks now and it's perfect.
Really?
Yeah.
Perfect is a big call for a car.
Well, it is. I mean, it's what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah?
Yeah, it lives up to its expectation.
Now, the one you went for, it's called an individual, isn't it?
Correct.
And that means it's very unlikely anyone else has the same colour and trim coordination in Australia.
Yeah, and that's what sold it for me.
It is, I can categorically say, it is bloody gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's got that sapphire black paint, which is like a metallic black.
You know what? Maybe you can help me with this one, because people ask what colour that interior is. I've got no idea. I don't even know what you call that.
I would just say it's orange. That sounds terrible, doesn't
but
really
it
do it
looks
justice.
Really great.
It looks sensational. It's like an Alcantara orange, suede-y sports interior.
It's definitely not for a vegan, yeah. lots of suede and...
Now, how do you go... So a lot of our listeners are hopefully listening they're thinking of buying a car. How do you go... Do you find the situation nerve-wracking and...
Not at all. I find it exciting because I'm... Well, I'm... Money's a funny object to me, so it's... It was easy to buy a car. I did a little bit of research, I guess. That's probably one thing, because we always give advice on people buying cars. So it's funny when you actually go and do it yourself. But I did call upon you to come. I mean, you're a BMW expert, I would say.
Oh, it's very nice. It's, of course, quite true, but it's nice when people tell me. Yeah.
But, it was funny doing it myself. But I guess I Googled exactly the model that I wanted. This is a little bit of a dream car that I've always wanted to buy. Yeah. So... I Googled it, and it's amazing how much information is on the internet. You can find so much so quickly. I spent half an hour on the internet and, you know, was convinced on buying the car that I wanted to buy.
And that's if we were to give anyone advice looking to buy their own car from the used market, is exactly as you say, Jeremy, know what you're after.
And even, definitely. But, obviously you've got to narrow it down to what you want. But it's funny, even being in the industry myself, I still... went on the internet to Google it like anybody would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's good. I think you took exactly the right tactic. You know, you knew what it was worth as well. That's obviously a really, really good tactic to go with. And much like going to an auction.
Oh, buying cars is fun, especially playing with salesmen.
Yeah. Oh. Well, but see, a lot of people find... You know the industry and you're good at dealing with people, but I know a lot of people find that very daunting. It's having to haggle. But... These guys deal with it all the time. Yeah. Salespeople are expecting.
I was a car salesman
for a long time. Of course, you were. Yeah.
I would have to say the best tactic, I've found, and you can use it with purchasing anything, is walking away.
I tried to do the non-threatening thing when I was a salesman, so I wouldn't go and badger anybody. I'd just go up and say, hey, if you want to talk, you know where to find me.
But, you know,
and chat when you feel like it and don't push too hard. Because a lot of people find salespeople are intimidated by the fact they think they're going to get duped or, you know, they're going to get stooged of their money.
Yeah.
And then it happens a lot. So
you're going into their environment, aren't you? You're going into the salesperson's lair. And a lot
jumping into a pool full of sharks.
You know? So did you find that tactic of being
non-threatening?
Did that
Absolutely.
Work for you? Yeah. Good. Mm. Why don't more do it then?
I have no idea. It attracts a certain disposition. And I was doing it as a casual job to get me through uni. So I wasn't a typical salesperson. And it generally attracts a certain disposition of being quite, you know, a dominant sort of figure who tries to sort of dominate the conversation. And that doesn't seem to work.
Definitely being educated in what you want and knowing what to expect from a car when you go in there.
Yep.
Definitely. And there's not a lot of money in the car sales, sort of, you know, retail sales. So your best thing is, like, I was trying to get as many other extras on top that I didn't have to pay for.
Mm. When you're armed with knowledge, that's the most powerful thing you can have.
Totally. Because you won't, you can't get swayed on a decision.
Mike, that sounded so profound. Oh, it's a rule for life, not just car shopping, you know?
I've got it tattooed on me somewhere.
No, you have not. Jeremy probably does, because Jeremy has a tattoo for every occasion.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, there we go. Congratulations, Jeremy.
Thanks.
I fully support your purchase. And if you are thinking of buying or have just bought a car and you want any kind of advice at all, that's what we're here for. You can always let us know any week, not just the week that I'm at the helm. 0427JOY949 is the text, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. Now, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You had a little bit of it. You took a leaf out of my book, and you had a little bit of a rant this week, didn't you? I think
I did.
You wrote a rather good story on for work, which was about something that I share a passion for.
Yes, I now get to write an opinion column, which is quite fun, and it makes me, it brings out the angry, ranty old person in me, which is always bubbling quite close to the surface. But the latest rant that I had was inspired by you, Dan, and something you said similarly quite recently, which is this trend, this annoying pattern that carmakers are doing of doing these long, drawn-out teaser campaigns for new models. We saw Ford do it with the Falcon. They showed us a headlight and a taillight and a bit of side skirt and a badge and a grill and a little bit of video. And Volvo have been dragging out the launch of the XC90 for months. And they're not going to reveal the car for two more months yet. And it gets at a point where it's information saturation. And you read through marketing guff and it says, this is a good move in the age of social media. You should drag things out. You should get people's attention, but not give them too much. You should tease them. You should titillate them. You should show them bits and pieces at a time. But for me, and I don't know if you listeners out there might agree, but I find that if there's a drawn-out campaign to show me a car, I'm sick of the bloody thing by the time they show it. I've been hearing about it for months. I've been seeing bits and pieces of it. I'm burnt out. I'm over it. And then they pull the covers off this magnificent new car that they want to, you know, show the world, and people are sick of it. I don't care anymore. It's old news. And I think it's actually counterproductive, and it works against them. And I really hope to hell that car makers stop listening to their marketing departments and start listening to common sense and just show us the bloody car.
Absolutely right. And as we've seen, cracking example is the Falcon. You know, we've seen every bit of it before the full reveal. So when they do the reveal, we'll be like, well, yeah.
Do you know what it's like?
Deal,
it's like
what it looks like.
It's on Christmas, and you've got this big present, and it looks great, and it's heavy, and it's firm, and it's this big present, awesome, happy days, and you start to tear the paper and you're loving life, and then you rip it open and it's four packets of socks.
You know, so true.
It's such a letdown. That's what this is. You better have something bloody good to show me at the end of a teaser campaign, or else it's going to blow up in your face, and quite often it's impossible to live up to the hype.
Absolutely. You look at the other way round of doing it, say, for example, Maserati's Alfieri. There were no real teaser campaigns.
Yeah, it was just like, bang, there's a car.
And not just a car, one of the prettiest cars we're probably going to see for a long while.
And it blew your face off because you didn't see it coming.
Absolutely right. If they teased the headlight and then the exhaust pipes and then a little bit of the interior, we'd be all like, yeah, we've got a pretty good idea of what that looks like. And when it comes out, we're like, yeah, told you so. However, bang, straight in your face, all in one go. It's a brilliant thing. And look at us talking about it now.
Well, it's like anything in life. You build up expectations to a certain point and it's always going to disappoint.
Absolutely right.
Always going to disappoint, because you build it up in your mind, you think it's going to be reaching this incredibly high watermark, and it's never going to do it. If it does do it, it's not an achievement, it's just meeting your expectation at best, or it's failing to meet your expectation at worst.
Is social media partly to blame for this? Because that's the platform which makes it very easy to do that.
Twitter's and the Facebook.
I think you can blame social media for a lot of problems.
Probably. Probably, Jeremy, yes. Yes, true. What's next? We've got the XC90, I suppose. That's been teased relentlessly, the Volvo XC90, their largest SUV. So we've seen so many bits of that. Haven't seen the complete car yet. And frankly, I'm just bored of the bloody thing now.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be the next one. Have we had a message in, Mike?
We have had a message in from Pat and...
Not Dog the Cat. Yes, Not Dog.
That's a good name for a cat.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Saying... Hi, Dan. Good to hear you again. It is good to hear Dan again. After a few life changes, I got rid of my six-month-old
A4 Audi and got a Volvo S60, and oh my god, it's like a go-kart. I love it. Would be great to hear what you think of the Volvo today. What do you think of the Volvo, Dan?
I actually really, having just said I hate the XC90, but only because I'm bored of its teasing campaign, I'm actually very impressed with the things that Volvo are doing at the moment. They're making really desirable cars that are great to live with, really quite different. You know how we frequently say a crime of any car on the road is it just looks like every other. Well, Volvo certainly couldn't be accused of doing that. And yeah, great fun to drive, and arguably one of the safest cars on the road.
The S60 is a very underrated car.
Mm.
Volvo's got it racing via supercars now to try and get some attention, to try and make people know that notice it. And at the moment, it's a real outside choice. The Audi A4 and a 3 Series and a C-Class outsell it by a huge margin. Mm. I've driven all of them quite recently as part of a thing that I was doing for work, and the S60 is right at the pointy end. You made a good choice. Yeah, I approve.
Thank you very much. And I also have to say thank you very much to everyone in the studio as well, because it is time to go. Another Fender Bender for another week. Thank you all so much for being here.
Good hosting, Dan.
Oh, yeah, stop. Well done. Stop. Well I do done. I like jumping.
You know what your reward is?
What's that?
Sausages.
Sausage Festival. Thank you, Jeremy, for being here. We love having you. Thank you also, Jeremy's boyfriend, Sean, for being in the studio and just looking gorgeous and
moral
seeing
support, isn't it?
Mike, thank you. I hope to see you next week. That would be wonderful. And a huge thank you to Hannah for manning the buttons and being
manning.
The wonderful production.
Womaning.
Sorry, quite right. I fell at the last hurdle. Until next week, this is Dan signing off for another week's Fender Bender. Please do drive safely.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.